Good morning, Boker Tova. Welcome back to Parsha Perspectives for today. Always a privilege and a pleasure to study the Parsha together. Sorry we can't offer coffee this morning. Hope everyone is having a meaningful and productive fast. Sara Bateves is trying to correct the sale of Yosef. Some have posited that's what Sara Bateves corresponds with, aside from the reasons given in the Gemara. But it's a day of introspection, self-reflection. It's a day of repair, relationships. It's a day of improving ourselves. And no better way to do that than studying the Parsha. I want to thank our Parsha series sponsors, Becky and Avi Katz and family, loving memory of David Grossman, Liuli Nishmas, David Ben Menachem Manashes, Neshama, Sharav, and Aliyah. We're so grateful to them for their generosity and their sponsorship. Parsha's Vayechi, page 268 in the Art Scroll, Stone Chumash. And with this, I don't know about you, it feels like it was just Simchas Torah. We just started Bereishis. I don't know how we're finishing the first book of Chumash, the first book of the Torah already, where the time goes, well, we're having fun. Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Shavasar Shana, Vayi Yimei Yaakov Shnei Chayev Sheva Shanim Ve'arba'am Ma'as Shana. Yaakov lived in Egypt for 17 years. These are the days of Yaakov, the years of his life, for 147 years. Vayikbru Yimei Yisrael Amos, he understands and he appreciates that he's at the end of the days, and therefore he gathers his family around. There's a lot of literature on the notion, the importance of gathering our family and leaving not only a will, not only trying to avoid paying taxes, not only trying to ensure a smooth transfer of our assets, but more importantly, an ethical will, what we call a tzava'a. And that's exactly what Yaakov Avinu does when he perceives that he's at the end of his life. He gathers his family not to talk about who gets which ring, which necklace, which mezuzah, who gets which item, this shas, who gets the talis, not to talk about who gets which item, which is not a bad idea also, if you'd like your family to get along even after you're gone, but it's a tzava, it's an ethical will. He's trying to communicate his core values, what's important, what drove his life, and the potential that he sees in each of them. Al Nasik Bereini B'Mitzrayim. The first thing, the first message he has for his son Yosef is, he says, if I find favor in your eyes, please, promise, swear to me, whatever you do, don't leave me. Don't just tell me, you have to follow through. Do for me a chesed ve'emes. Do something that's both kind and just and righteous and true. And what is that thing? Al Nasik Bereini B'Mitzrayim. Do not bury me. Where? In Mitzrayim. Don't bury me in Mitzrayim. Rav Yerucham wonders. The great Rav Yerucham, the great Mashgiach of the Mir. Rashi says, Simna Yadcha, place your hand, Tachas Yerechi, the only place of a mitzvah. There was no Sefer Torah. There was no Chumash to put your hand on and affirm. What was the only Dvar Mitzvah, the only Hefta of a mitzvah that you could swear or affirm on was a Bris Milah. Sounds peculiar, bizarre to us, but it was very holy and noble. V'hishava, says Rashi, swear to me. Yaakov is making his son Yosef swear. V'tzarach bir, and Rav Yerucham wonders, Madua yatzarach Yaakov lashbias beno? I mean, isn't he embarrassing Yosef? 22 years of separation. Yosef didn't lose an iota of who he was. He's still Yosef. Ani Yosef. I'm not Safnas Paneach. The Egyptians know me by an Egyptian name, but that's not who I am. In my core, I've never deviated. I'm still that Yosef. I'm still the Yosef in the Beis Medrash of our father. And yet, L'chora Zemevayesh is Yosef. V'chi kayemes hava amina sh'Yosef l'yishma l'kayim b'kashoso achrona shel aviv. Does Yaakov really have a thought that Yosef, the great Yosef, is not going to follow through on the request, on the last dying wish of his father? He says, not good enough. Not good enough that I asked you for a favor and you said yes. I need you to swear. I need you to promise. I'm going to need two notaries. We're going to need somebody representing the court, a couple notaries. We're going to need some witnesses. Yosef's like, excuse me? What? Me, Dad, it's me. I know we were separated. Remember, I sent the agalos. I still remember the sugya we were holding in. And Yosef, I'm still Yosef. You don't trust me? You don't believe me? I have to swear. I have to affirm. Kiyote Badava, Rabbi Yerucham says we see a similar idea. Kesheshalach Avram es Eliyaz l'chapei shidduch livno Yitzchak. When Avram sends Eliezer to look for a shidduch for Yitzchak, Hishbiyo shleikach mibnos kan, promise me you will not set up Yitzchak with one of the girls from Canaan. Promise me. Now, I understand some of the Sharchanim today, after you pay the retainer, and after you sign the DocuSign, and after, okay, so now promise me, after the retainer and the DocuSign, that you're not going to set up with someone from this community. Promise me. But Eliezer is Avram's trusted, he's in charge of his whole house. He's in charge of everything. So he doesn't trust him. He makes him swear. Kesheshach Yaakov is Esav Lishchot lo kedei shiucho levarcho. Hisiru vitzivo sheyashchi is hakino heitev. Shileachan in velos. Gam sham tzarech bir. Mimanoshach. Why does not trust enough to be able to rely on his word? What's with the swearing? So Rav Yerucham in his Das Torah, at the end of Breishas, he says the following. Hasaras achilas dam yisira Torah bekam alavin. Torah tells us in several places, you're not allowed to eat blood. One of the laws of kashrus, so you cannot consume blood. That's why we salt meat. That's why you have to roast a liver. You're not allowed to consume blood. Nevertheless, the Torah says, it's sefer dvarim. Rak chazak levelti achol hadam. Strengthen yourself. Be strong. Whatever you do, don't eat blood. Sifri comes along and quotes Ben Azai, Omer lo ba'akasav elo lahasircha lelamercha ad kama ata tzorech lizchazik b'mitzvos. I don't know why the Torah has to tell me so many times don't eat blood. I have no interest in eating blood. It's disgusting. It's repulsive. Why would I want to eat blood? That the Torah has to say, strengthen yourself, don't eat Cape Cod potato chips. Strengthen yourself, don't eat Trader Joe's corn chips. Strengthen yourself, don't eat, okay, for some of you, chocolate, ice cream, Baruch Hashem, I don't have those temptations. But strengthen yourself, rak chazak levilti, be strong and hold back and don't eat that which is bad for you. I understand. But dam, blood, I have no interest. So es adam shu kali shomri mimenu shenad misav elohu tzrach lechazcha v'asar aso kal v'chom l'shar mitzvos. Says Rashi there, if blood, that you have no temptation, no desire, no interest to eat, the Torah nevertheless has to say, be strong, strengthen yourself, don't give in. Al achas kama v'kama, kal v'chomer, all the more so, the things we have a drive and a temptation for. Rashi, tseyu laman matan tzcharen shel mitzvos, im adam shenafsha shel odam kotza mimenu, haporish menu zoche lo levonav acharav, kal v'chomer legezel v'arayos shenafsha shel odam mis'ava lehen. If something you have no desire for, nevertheless you get a great reward when you abstain from, all the more so when you overcome the drive, the temptation, the desire, the things you really want to do and nevertheless you don't do, all the more so the reward waiting for you. Says Rabbi Yerucham, Kesherom ad kamei sira Torah, sa'adam shli yismoch al atzmo. So you see the Torah goes out of its way and says, don't rely on yourself. Blood, I'm repulsed by, I'm disgusted by. Yeah, okay, lovely. But still, you never know. That steak, it looks like it's so delicious. You're going to want that steak so badly. It's going to be roasted in such a barbecue, in black and blue. It's a fast day already at 9:30 in the morning. I'm talking so much about food. Black and blue. You know, that's the proper way to eat a steak. You know what black and blue is? Char on the outside and nice and rare on the inside. Black and blue. Next time you go to a restaurant, tell them, my rabbi said I should ask for black and blue. Some grilled onions, fried onion, delicious. So black. So you're going to see a piece of steak, it's black and blue, it's grilled perfectly charred on the outside, rare, still a shtickle moving on the inside, still a little bit alive on the plate on the inside, but it hasn't been salted. No malicha was done. You're going to be tempted, it's too late if it's already roasted, before it's roasted. You're going to be tempted, no malicha was done. You can't trust yourself. The Yetzirah, the drive, impulse is so strong, we can't trust ourselves. So mevinim hetev sha'avos hakadoshim lo samchu al atzmam. And you see from here that the great avos, the greater person is, they never trust themselves. They never trust themselves and they never trust the people around them. When something is so precious, when something is so critical, when something is so central and definitional, don't trust yourself and don't even trust the people around you. Anshulduk, I don't mean to insult you. No offense, it has nothing to do with you. I don't trust myself. I don't trust you. Torah says about several things. Ein apotropos l'arayas, for example. Torah says you can't be alone in a room with someone of the opposite gender to whom you're not related and you couldn't marry. You can't be alone. Why not? Hashem, you don't trust me? Hashem looks at you and he says, that's exactly right. I don't trust you. Because I invented and placed that drive in you and something so important, so definitional, the striving and ambition for Kedusha, for sanctity, that's right. I don't trust you. Ein apotropos for arayas. Ein apotropos for divrei mamonos. We don't believe you should leave money sitting around with someone else there, even your own family members. What, you don't trust them? That's right. You don't trust them. Some drive, some impulse is so strong, we don't trust. We don't trust. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu says to Yosef, it's no offense. There's nothing to do. I don't trust myself. I don't trust you. I desperately don't want to be buried here. I want for eternity to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. We'll talk about it in a moment. And therefore, Simna Yadcha Tachez Yirechi, swear to me. It's not insulting to you. It has nothing to do with you. These are the most important things in the world. Avram says, Eliezer, you're in charge of my whole estate. You have all the passwords to all the accounts. You have everything. But when it comes to a shidduch for my son, the very future and continuity of my people, of my mission, of my charge, don't be insulted. It has nothing to do with being insulted. Some things are so strong, so powerful, so core that a person has to swear. A person has to swear. Comes along the Otzer Plos HaTorah, our new favorite sefer. The Heilige Otzer Plos HaTorah. Kosova Rambam. So here Yaakov Avinu says, swear to me. Swear to me what? You won't leave me here in Shmutz Laretz. Don't leave me here in Chutz Laretz. Don't leave me here outside the land of Israel. Promise, swear to me that you're going to bring me to Eretz Israel. Promise you're going to intern me forever. I will be resting in Eretz Israel. It's like the Rambam, Hilchas Malachim Perakei Halacha Yid Aleph. Hakover ba be'eretz Yisrael nischaper lo, being buried in Israel is a source of kapara. Ukilu amakom shubo mizbach kapara. Ve'ein adome kolatos o mechayim lekolatos achar moso. Va'afapichen gedolei hachachamim ayim olichim meseyim l'sham. Tzeyu lamad mi? Yaakov Avinu v'Yosef HaTzadik. Says the Rambam, of course, get to Israel while you're alive. Get to Israel while you have life. Get to Israel while you are among the living and you're navigating and you're conquering and you're yeshiva aretz, you are settling in the land. All of us, it should be a question not if, but when. Sarah Batavis, we're mourning the siege, Nebuchadnezzar around Yerushalayim. Churban, if we feel churban, part of the churban is that we're not there. We need to be there. Not if, but when. Better to go while you're alive. But if you don't go while you're alive, says the Rambam, Melchus Malachim, be buried there. And from whom do we learn this? Two great people who desperately begged and made their progeny swear they would not be interned outside of Israel, were Yaakov Avinu and Yosef HaTzadik. The Rambam in his tshuva, Siman Shinayin Beis, Echad She'ava Ve'imo HaYadarim B'chutz La'aretz, an individual whose parents were living outside of the land, V'ishtokuku B'chayim Chayosun L'zakos Achim Yisosun L'kvur B'Eretz Yisrael, V'gam B'shas Chuyam Asher Mesu Bo Amru Shemishtokim L'kvur B'Eretz Yisrael. They asked, please bury us in Israel. Even during their final days, during their terminal illness, they said, please confirm you're going to bury us in Israel. So this individual was very poor, had no idea how to fulfill this promise, found somebody. You know, you say, can anyone take a small package? Okay? It's an unusual request, a small package. I have the bones of my parents. Would you mind? Do you have room in your luggage? Room in your luggage. I'm only taking a small carry. Do you have room in your luggage for the bones of my parents? V'shal ha'shal me'arambam. Im tzorch limchos bi'ar ha'ben. V'masa b'ze mitzvah avar avera. So the question of the Rambam. Is it right to do? Send the bones with someone else? Bury them here. Send them to Israel. Hadavar she'asa tov ma'od. V'chein asa g'dol l'chach me'israel. And the Rambam's short, succinct answer was, what you did is very correct, is right, is righteous. Bury in Israel. The Maharsha writes similarly in Chiddush HaGadol of Baba Basra. Zchus gedola hi lios nikbar be'eretz Yisrael. Af mi shemes b'chutz la'aretz v'kosher kei mi shebal Hashem b'chayav. It's a big merit. It is a big source of atonement to be buried in the land of Israel. Better to go alive. If you can't go, and if you don't go alive, at least go and be buried there. And we find many Ma'amari Chazal, he quotes here, from several places. In the Medrash, Brishas Rabbah, in several places. Shayachmir shlolavi meshen if the b'chutz la'aretz yikover etz Yisrael. He says, but now we find some of our Chazal, the opposite, who died outside of Israel, and the Chachamim said, bury them where they are. Don't schlep them, don't delay, don't bury them in Israel. In fact, there are some who object and say, if you see the Mishnah at the end of Moed Katan, we simplified and we made universal our standards of burial. Plain pine casket. You could be the wealthiest Jew in the world. You could be worth billions of dollars. You could have the most ornate and ostentatious coffin. But we say, don't. Every Jew, the tachrichin, burial shrouds have no pockets. You know why they have no pockets? A man gets buried in his kittel. You wear your kittel Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Pesach Seder. You may have noticed the kittel has no pockets. Why does the kittel have no pockets? Why does the tachrichon have no pockets? Because you can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. You've never seen a hearse attached to a U-Haul. Ever. You've never seen it. You can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. There are no pockets. So therefore, the coffin, standard, plain pine box. In fact, Yosef is the only one in all of Tanakh who's mentioned is buried in an aron, in a coffin. We know the minhag in Eretz Yisrael is to be buried without a coffin. Yosef is the only one who is mentioned in Tanakh. He's buried in a coffin. So outside of Israel, where the minhag is to bury in a coffin, plain pine casket. Aye, mine could be gold lettering with the logo from my bar mitzvah in gold. No, plain pine casket. Everyone's the same. You could be worth billions of dollars. My tachrichen, I never understood. You see, there's a minhag of some chassidim. If you go and you go buy a kittel, I went to buy a new kittel. They have kittel with gold down the middle, silver, tara. I said, what's going on over here? I thought the whole kittel was supposed to be simple. Ah! So different minhagim. Different people have different minhagim. So, but the kittel is plain. The tachrichen, everyone wears the same tachrichen. Nobody's got designer, custom made, the tachrichen. I would give you an example of designer. I don't even know who would impress you, the designer tachrichen. Nobody's got designer tachrichen. They're all the same. So now to create a standard where the expectation is that everybody gets buried in Eretz Yisrael, you know what it costs to get a grave in Eretz Yisrael? Do you know what it costs? The flight? Do you know what it costs? The rental car? Do you know what it costs? Everything to get to Eretz Yisrael. So some are opposed to being buried in Eretz Yisrael because we're going to move the goalposts. We're going to make it the standard, the expectation for people who can't afford. They'll go into debt. They'll put the kids in public school to bury the parents in Eretz Yisrael. And that's not right. That's not right. The same way Mishnayos and Moed Katan said, we created a standard so that there'd be a universal observance of a coffin, of tachrichen. So how is it that Yaakov and Yosef insisted they have to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? So Shlach Kadosh, Parshas Vayechi, Liyashev Kushazu Heich Tzivuch Yaakov Yosef, Shealos in Eretz Yisrael, Lachash Shemesim Mitzrayim, because of Dabar Pella, She Yaakov Avonov Hachayu B'Mitzrayim Besoch Avira De Eretz Yisrael, Imkein Lo Mesim B'Mitzrayim Klal, Kiim Be'Avira De Eretz Yisrael. V'chein merumas b'divra Yaakov v'shachavti im avosai. Yaakov Avinu says, I will lay to rest with my forefathers. She amus b'makom she'avosai sham dainu Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov and his sons, what was the heter to leave Eretz Yisrael? Why were they allowed to leave? The answer is they left and they took a piece of Eretz Yisrael with them. When they settled in Goshen, they created an embassy of Eretz Yisrael in Mitzrayim. It was an embassy of Eretz Yisrael in Mitzrayim. Says the Shlach, it was ki'ilu they were living in an extension, in an expanded Eretz Yisrael. The border of Eretz Yisrael expanded into Mitzrayim. So it was as if living in Mitzrayim. So he said, v'kivartana b'kvurasam, he was already entitled because he was ki'ilu already living in Eretz Yisrael. He was allowed to be moved. He was allowed to be transferred. The Sefer Vavaya Amudim, who was the son of the Shlach, Rav Sheftel Horovitz, was the son of the Shlach, who took over for the Shlach when the Shlach moved to Eretz Yisrael. He gave a different answer. Yaakov Avinu be'emes lo meis b'mitzrayim, rak b'vol Eretz Kanan meis sham. V'lachein amar Yaakov v'shachavti im avosai. Yaakov had a little bit of a pulse. They hadn't yet declared him dead. He was terminally ill and he was a goseis. He was just about dead when they took him to Canaan. But in fact, they didn't confirm death until he was in Canaan. That's why he was allowed to be buried there. Those are the different reasons the Shlach and his son give for why he was allowed to be buried. I personally, if one can afford it, I understand the concern, not everybody can afford it, we don't want to change the standard. If you ask me, and again, I don't want to make anyone, you know, concerned or have doubt or anxious if you already have arrangements outside of Eretz Yisrael. But I went several years ago, I went with a group to Cuba for a day. And we toured Cuba for one day, which was plenty of time. I didn't need any longer in Cuba for that day. And one of the places we went was the Jewish cemetery. And one of the people with us, grandparents had survived the Nazis and fled, and like others, they made it to Cuba. And there was a thriving Jewish community in Cuba before the revolution. There was kollelim and yeshivas and seminaries for girls and shuls and kosher restaurants, a thriving, thriving Jewish community. And the cemetery reflects the affluence and how thriving that community was. The person who was with us, his grandfather is buried in Cuba. and he has a marble headstone, magnificent. His grandmother's not buried in Cuba, because before the revolution, they fled, they got out. They got out. This was his first time ever being at the grave of his grandfather. First time ever there. And I thought to myself, you know, when they buried his grandfather, undoubtedly it was a big hesped and a big levaya, and the thriving Jewish community buried in Cuba where they would be Jews forever and be able to visit the Beis HaKvaros. And now Cuba, the Jewish community, I'll tell you a little secret, the Jewish community in Cuba is mostly intermarried. They're not even Jewish. There are a few Jews left. The majority of the Jewish community in Cuba today is not even technically or halachically Jewish. Where is the one place today, as we're seeing the spike and rise of anti-Semitism in America, the one place that, please God, our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, Amir Tzashem, will always go, whether it's for Sukkot, whether it's to live, whether it's for the year in Israel, whether it's in the summer, is Eretz Yisrael. If a person has the capacity, if they don't, they shouldn't feel guilty. If they already have plans and they have a family plot outside of Israel, by all means, there's a strong Masorah to be buried there too. I don't mean to make anybody feel concerned. But if you don't yet have plans, first of all, BRS has a section in Eretz Yisrael. We have a section here in Hollywood. But if you don't yet have plans, that could be part of the consideration. He continues, Matzina b'sfarim ha'kadoshim kama etzos l'mishenu yochel likaver. What if you can't be buried in Israel? Ma yaseh? How could you be buried in America so as if you're buried in Eretz Yisrael? So here we have a minug. We have a minug. The Medrash Talpios quotes, Im yanichu al einei ha'meis ve'al tiburo ve'al miloso me'afer Eretz Yisrael, nechshev lo ki'ilu hu'kavar mamash be'Eretz Yisrael. Every Levaya I officiate, not in Eretz Yisrael, but here, we have a minug. We take afar from harazesim. We take earth. One of the first funerals I did as the rabbi. This is where there are two types of retired rabbis. There are retired rabbis who are like a thorn in the side of the rabbi. There are retired rabbis who just want to catch the rabbi, who want to malshin the rabbi, who want to drive the rabbi crazy. And there are retired rabbis like Rabbi Simcha Friedman, Alav HaShalom, who was a very, very special man and a dear friend and mentor to me. And one of the first, he was a beloved member here, Rabbi Simcha Friedman. Those members of BRS undoubtedly remember him. So one of the first funerals I did, I said at the end, we were lowering the casket. I said, now the minhag is that we place dirt from Harazesim on top of the casket. And we bought. Afterwards, he pulled me aside. He said, Rabbi, it would sound a lot nicer if you refer to it as earth, not dirt. He didn't tell somebody else, oh, the rabbi said dirt. He didn't. He said so gently, so kindly, you know, it sounds a lot nicer. Just think about something to consider. It sounds a lot nicer. Every funeral, every single funeral since then, I say, we'll now place earth from Harazesa. Nobody wants to think that we're dumping dirt on their loved one. But we're placing earth from the holy Mount of Olives. Psh, earth. So the minhag is, we have members of the Chevra Kadisha. We have an outstanding Chevra Kadisha. Outstanding Chevra Kadisha who are busy every night with the Chesed Shel Emes, the Lashon of this week's Pasha. Do a Chesed and Emes with me. Our Chevra Kadisha, you can't imagine how many Taharas they've done. So you know that at the end of the Tahara, before we close the lid of the coffin, we take earth from our Azesim and we place it, as the Medrash Tapio says, we place it on the eyes, we place it on the heart, and we place it on the Mila for a male, and then we close, after the Tahara, after they're dressed in the Tachrichin, we lift, we place shards, but underneath the shards, we place earth from Harazesim on the eyes, on the heart, the Makam Amila. We do it again at the Levaya. We lower the casket. We sprinkle earth on top of the casket from Harazesim. From why? It's Nechshav Ki'ilu Kavar Mamash Be'eretz Yisrael. Because it creates a connection, a bond between the person and the land of Israel. Interesting. Chaim Pelagi has a practice. He says they used to bury along Sfas Hayam. And then it was Nechshav Ki'ilu Nikvar Be'eretz Yisrael. I don't know, today maybe it would be the airport, not the Sfas Hayam. The best way, the fastest way was ship. So if you buried along the seashore, you were already on your way. Today, maybe it's next to the airport. Maybe it's next to the airport would be the closest. Okay, so far we're at the first pasuk. Okay. Perek Mem Ches, pasuk Beis. Vayachar dvar ma'ilo v'yamad li'yosef v'nei avicha choleh. Yosef's told your father sick. He takes his two sons, as Menashe, ves Ephraim. Why does Yosef have to be told his father is sick? Why is he told his father is sick? He gets a call, your father is sick. Why does he get a call, his father is sick? He never visits his father? He never goes? The home that Yaakov lived in, the assisted living facility, the nursing home, his brothers, wherever Yaakov's living, they have to call, the concierge service has to call Yosef. I think you should probably come visit your father. He's not doing well. Ooh, he's not doing well. He took a turn. Let me get my sons and go. He didn't see him every day, once a week. He didn't check in ever. Why not? Why not? So, listen to what he says. Otzer plus HaTorah. The rush in Maseches Kedushin brings a chumra nifla'a in the mitzvah of Kibbut Av from the Maharam Mirutenberg. The Maharam Mirutenberg was the last of the Balei HaTosfos. The Maharam Mirutenberg quotes, the Rosh quotes the Maharam, his Rebbe, the Maharam Mirutenberg. Listen to this incredible comment. Shemayom she'olah l'gedula lo yimekabel es p'nei aviv v'gam lo ratza she'yavo aviv elav. Maharam Mirutenberg felt the following conflict. From the day that he ascended to greatness, that he had a position of distinction, he never wanted to see his father. Because of the following conflict, what would be? Does he honor his father? Or now, with his ascension to a prominent position, should his father honor him? What happens if a son is a Rebbe of the father? Does the son still have to stand for the father if the son is now the Rebbe of the father? And the Gemara leaves it as Ibaidala Ifshita. The Gemara doesn't draw a conclusion. The Gemara doesn't pass in Allah Maisa. Velo Ratza Maharam Mirutenberg Lahasmig is Atman Besekra Doraisa. The Maharam Mirutenberg Kibbut Avim is a din Doraisa. It's a biblical law. The Maharam Mirutenberg didn't want to enter into a case of doubt in a biblical law. Should he stand for his father, not stand for his father now that he's his father's Rebbe? Shemu tzarech lakum ne'aviv ne'shu chayi b'chvodo. Im kein einzah min aroi she'akim aviv m'tonav. V'lachin lo hikba p'nei aviv lo ratza shavav yavoi lov. Do I stand for my father? Does my father stand for him? You know what's easier? Send him my regards. Some peladik achumra of the Maharam Mirutenberg. Why is it peladik? I would think, in order to avoid a halachic conundrum, you're not going to see your father ever again. I would think there's no bigger breach of Kibbut Av Ve'Eim than that. What could disappoint a parent more than never seeing in order to avoid your you thought you knew the chumrah of the week. It's the new chumrah of the week. Avoid your parent. Again, some don't want to spend Pesach with their parents, and so now you have a good out. Can't spend we can't spend Pesach together. It's a halachic chumrah. I don't know if I should stand for you. You should stand for me. Better we should be apart for Pesach. Chalila, chalila. So that's the Kenan Bavali Atosos Kosos Yosef Lo Yerogel Yosef Itzel Yaakov Aviv. Why am I mentioning this here? Why does the Otzer Plus HaTorah bring this down here? Because the Das Kenan Bavali Atosos says that was Yosef's calculation. From when Yaakov came down, Yosef avoided Yaakov as much as possible. Why? Sheyayore sheyishalo Yaakov inyin heyach hurad l'mitzrayim. He wasn't worried about, do I stand for my father? Does my father stand for me? Though that taka was a good question too. On the one hand, it's his father, Kibbut Av Ve'Eim. On the other, it's the viceroy of Egypt. You got to show honor to a king. He had the same halachic conundrum, the same halachic dilemma, but he had another dilemma. You know what his dilemma was? If Yaakov and Yosef, they're enjoying a glass of wine. They finished, they're learning the chavrusa for the day, and they're enjoying some company, a cup of coffee. You think Yaakov's never going to say to Yosef, you know, hey Yosef, you never did tell me, how'd you end up down here? It's never going to come up. 22 years, Yaakov was inconsolable. He refused to accept Yosef was dead. He's alerted, he's told, oh Yosef Chai, he's still alive. Wow, let's go. He comes down. He didn't ask the brothers. He's never going to ask Yosef, you know, you never did tell me. What happened? You know, I got the coat, the special coat. I spent a lot of money on that coat, Yosef. I got it back covered in blood. What happened? Yosef was afraid. If he would tell his father, if his father would just read his face and know that it was the brothers, his father might curse his brothers. Al-Kain miyat lavakro. And therefore, he avoided seeing his father. That's what the Das Kain and Bala Tosos. Yosef so showed a superhuman allegiance and loyalty to his brothers. You know, if I was Yosef, you know what I do? Dad, let's hang out all the time. I'm a tzaddik that I didn't volunteer what happened. But he asked, what can I do? I would never tell him. I wouldn't initiate. I wouldn't volunteer it. But my father asked me, Kibbutz, what can I do? Yosef, with such loyalty and allegiance to his brothers, after an absence of 22 years, and desperate to make up for lost time, still avoids his father in order to protect his brothers. Can understand why the end of our parsha, it's even more painful that after Yaakov dies, the brothers have to say, don't kill you. Do you know what I've done? I've killed myself over you. And now you're worried I'm going to kill you. So says the Otzer Plos HaTorah, says the holy Jew who put the Sefer together, a good friend of Mr. Lipschitz, Reb Wolf Zicherman, says maybe the Pshat in the Das Akenim Balatosos is like the Maharam Rotenberg. Maybe Yosef really had the Suffolk Doraisa. Do I stand for my father? Does my father stand for me? He writes in the footnote, Sha'alti, I asked Rav Chaim Kanievsky whether this Pshat could be correct. Maybe Yosef was like Maharam Rotenberg, the same Chumrah. To which Reb Chaim answered, a resounding ulai. I'm sure that was very heartening. Ulai, maybe. Maybe that's the pshat. Maybe it's not the pshat. Who knows? Who knows? The Rush disagrees with his Rebbe Mufak. The Rush seems to reject this. I'm not suggesting we start applying it. The Rush seems to reject this approach of the Maharam Rotenberg. Don't worry about your Suffolk Dorais. Hashem wants you to spend time with your father. That Kibbutz Avim is spending, both stand the whole time, both sit the whole time, figure it out. But he wants you to spend time with your father. Perek Mem Ches Pasuk Zayin. One of my, I don't want to say favorite Pasuk because it's such a sad Pasuk. But the wording, the language of this Pasuk, I point that out every year, I'm sure. Yaakov is turning to his son Binyamin. Perek Mem Ches Pasuk Zayin. And he says, Vani, bevoi mi Padan, when I came from Padan Aram, Mesa alai Rachel be'eretz Kanan baderech, Rachel went and she died on me. Could you believe it? I had the car for so long. It hit 100,000 miles. And punked, when I left Padan Aram, the car died on me. I wanted to call you, but my cell phone, it died on me. Whoever heard about a human being you describe as Mesa alai? She went and she died on me. Your mother, she died on me. I needed her. How was I supposed to raise all these children and get out from Maariv in time? Mesa alai, and your mother up and went and died on me. Such a funny wording, no? Like a car, like a phone. Mesa alai, your mother, she went and died on me. Mesa alai, Rachel, on our way to Ephrasa, on our way to Ephrat, ve'ek berea sham b'derech Ephrasi, beis lachem, I had no choice, I buried her there, on the path, on the way. What could I do? That's where I buried her. She went up and died on me. Says the Megid Yosef, says Rav Yosef Saratskin, the Megid Yosef, Mesa Alai. Lashon Mesa Alai Me'oreres Tamiya Shari Yaakov Omer Zeh. Who is Yaakov saying this to? Yosef. He's trying to make Yosef understand, it's not that I didn't love your mother, that's why I left her here. He's filling Yosef in. And he's telling Yosef what happened in his absence. Your mother died. Ooh, she's in Maras HaMachpelah with everybody else? Nope, not quite. She's on the roadside. By herself. Don't worry, I marked the area you can visit. But she's not in this illustrious, prominent, in perpetuity, a place the Jewish people will go. Because she up and went and died on me on the way. I had to leave the car. You ever drive a 95? How many abandoned cars there are? I always wonder, like, what happened? And whoever left that car, didn't think they're not coming back for it? So that's what Yaakov tells Yosef. She went and up and died on me on the side of the road. I had no choice. That's where I buried her. Mesa alai, on me. Whom is Yaakov telling this to? Yosef. Alai? True, you were left a widower. But Yosef was left an orphan. V'chi Yosef pachos yasom mimash Yaakov alman? Is Yosef left less of an orphan than Yaakov as a widower? Yosef feels less pain than Yaakov? That Yaakov communicates Rachel's death only in association with his loss, not Yosef. So the Gemara Sanhedrin Chav Beis, Kava Mikra Zeb, Amakra Leklal, the Gemara derives a principle from here, very painful principle. Some of you know it all too well, that Ein Isha Mesa, Ela labayla. Mesa alai. Yaakov says to Yosef, your mother died on me. I know you feel the pain of her loss, but you're married, you have children, you have a life, you have a future. She was my other half. She was my everything. Ein isha mesa ela labayla. Kipshuta ma'od ze metaris atzar shala almon. Shu gadol mitzar shal shar krovim. Chazal here characterized, of all the people who suffered that loss, and there are people who suffer a loss, Nebuch, maybe the person who died had parents who are still yet alive. They have a spouse, they have siblings, they have children, they have nieces, they have nephews. So many people suffered. But the greatest pain is felt, the most acute pain is felt, the most piercing, inconsolable pain is felt by the spouse. Everybody else was one plus one. I was a child, plus you were my parent. A sibling, plus you were my sibling. A person, plus you were my child. But for the spouse, I was a half, and you made me whole. We were two halves who became a whole. Shlafiza ena meduyak loshen ein isha mesa ella. But still, wonders the Megid Yosef. It's true that the pain of the spouse is greater. It doesn't mean others don't have also great pain, but the greatest pain is felt by the spouse. But why does it say ella, only labayla? It should be ein isha mesa. A spouse dies and is felt the most by the spouse. Why is the language of Chazal not the most, but Ella only by the spouse? Shemora kol misasa ina el labayla l'shar krove in shem tzar klal v'chein t'mu abiyosa shekana makar l'klal zeh adayin esher liyakov shalosh nashim. And here he says, Taka, where do we learn this whole rule from? Eini shemesa el labayla. From whom do we learn it? From Yaakov. Yaakov didn't remarry. When Rachel died, he still had three wives. He's still plenty of laundry done, plenty of dinners made, plenty of shopping taken care of, plenty of the children being tended to. He had plenty still. Many men remarry quickly because they need to. They'd be lost. They'd be wearing dirty clothing, malnourished, lost, don't know how to get anywhere, never getting on. They'd be finished. Yaakov, it's not that he remarried quickly because he'd be lost. He was still married to three women. And that's the person that we learn the rule from, Ein Isha Mesa Ella Labayla. So why Ella, asks the Megid Yosef, what do you mean only? And why from Yaakov, who still had three more wives? Ech nemar alav sharaku etzar al misasa shel Rachel. Bizman she Yosef and Binyamin nisharu b'lo aim. If you're Yosef, you say, listen, Dad, I'm sure that was rough for you losing mom, but you still have three wives. And Binyamin and I, we have no mother. So what do you mean? Mesa alai. What do you mean on me? V'asher alkei nira, says the Megid Yosef. Nira de chazal lo bo bezelimdo des tzaram shel kol ha'avelim ela bo lahagder yachas ish v'ishto. Because of those questions, you see just how compelling our rabbis were trying to characterize what is the goal of a husband and wife, of a relationship, of a marriage. Person loses a parent, they remain your parent forever. You say Kaddish, you observe a Yahrzeit. You go visit the kever, they're always your parent. Person loses a brother, a sibling, they remain forever your sibling. So much so that the halacha of the Torah says, if a sibling died without a child, you have to do yibum. You have to continue their name. But yachas ish v'ishto bato lagamri la'achar misa. You might think that the husband and wife relationship, it's now nullified, it's now done, it's finished, it's severed. Kiloshana mishna kones atzma. How does a woman find freedom? What makes her eligible to marry again? The Mishnah in Kedushin says two things. Get and misa sabal. Those two ways. When I was back in yeshiva, I'll never forget a Friday, we were rallying in Manhattan. A man who refused to give his wife a get. Even back then we had agunas, even back then we rallied. So we rallied on a Friday. Didn't have to take off time from learning. Outside this man's office, we had signs going up and down the sidewalk in Manhattan. And someone thought of a great jingle, a great thing that we would say. What was it? Two ways a woman goes free, the person's name, so-and-so, which way is it going to be? Then we were told that's probably a bad idea. What are the two ways a woman goes free? Either give the get or the death of the husband. It's a story of Rekiva Eger. Someone once went to see Rabbi Akiva Eiger over the issue of giving a get. Rabbi Akiva Eiger tried to persuade him, you have to give the get. Halachically, it's proper, it's time to give the get. And the man refused. He said, look, there's two ways that a woman is going to go free. It's a Mishnah and Kiddushin. So I'm just telling you, she'll either go free because you give the get, it's the right thing to do, let's do it right now. Or the Mishnah says, Misa Sabal. The man told off Rabbi Akiva Eiger, swore he'd never give the get. He walked out of the office. He tripped on the stairs and died on the way down. It's the story of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. He died on the way down the stairs. So, Kones Asman beget of Mises Abal. Two ways a woman goes free, by giving a get or the death of the husband. So all the other relationships are blood relationships. Parents, children, siblings, they're all blood relationships. A spouse is not a blood relationship. It's the only one that you could have divorced. You can't emancipate in halacha from your parents, from your siblings. That's a bond that is eternal. But a spouse, it is created and it can also be severed. In all the other cases, there's a blood connection that remains. But when it comes to a spouse, it feels more permanent. The sever, the break, feels that it runs deeper. And that's why the pain is the greatest. And that's why it's Ella. There's something about death when it comes to a spouse that is definitionally, categorically different than it is when it comes to every other relative. And that's why it says Ella. And that's why it says Alai. That's the pain that feels. That's the sensitivity that we should have for someone who loses a spouse, the pain that they are enduring, the pain that they are going through. Mesa alai Rachel. The Otzer Plos HaTorah has a comment here as well. Otzer Plos HaTorah says, Mesa alai Rachel. Why she's not buried in Maras HaMachpelah. The Chizkuni writes, Tam Nifl Lama Nikvar Rachel Beis Lechem. Pasuk here says she's buried in Beis Lechem. She's not buried in Maras HaMachpelah. Why isn't she buried in Maras HaMachpelah? So the Chizkuni says, Shemesa Rachel Yidei Koshi Leida Shel Binyamin. Listen to the Chizkuni. Rachel died during childbirth. Uginayu Leisha Yoleda Shemesa Laholicha Lemerchuk LaHashosa Penyas Lach Lachu HaTachrichim Min Hadam. She died from hemorrhaging during childbirth. If you are a member of a Chevra Kadisha, you know that if somebody hemorrhages, they have bleeding that you can't stop, it runs the risk of soiling tachrichin, and it is very demeaning for the mace, and we seek to preserve the honor of the mace. So says the Chizkuni, what Yaakov was telling Yosef is, your mother died during childbirth. I couldn't afford to delay by taking her to bury her in Maras HaMachpelah. She would be soiled, covered in the blood of hemorrhaging during childbirth. And therefore, I had no choice but to bury her right here. I had to do it immediately. I couldn't wait. And that wasn't dishonoring her. That was the way to honor her. By not waiting, by not delaying, by doing it immediately. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says, Hayel Yaakov Mikne Kaved Ma'od. Yaakov had a lot of assets. Yaakov had a lot of property. So even though Maras HaMachpelah was a short time, a half-day journey from Beis Lechem, but with all of the entourage that Yaakov had, what he said is, who did you want me to abandon? Who did you want me to throw overboard? I had this whole entourage to take the time. True, as, what's the expression? As the eagle flies. True, it's a half a day journey on the GPS. I got it. Waze, Google Maps, they all tell you it's half a day. But they don't know the entourage I had that would slow us down. It would have taken a lot longer. And therefore, I had no choice. I had to bury her right here. That's the Ramban. The Ramban says another explanation. Tam Zayin Ella Divrei Hisnatzlosish Natzel Yaakov LiYosef Ikar Atam Shelo Kover Yaakov Izroch Maras HaMachpelah SheYaakov Mizbayish MeAvosav Ashenasa Shtei Achayos Lachin Lo Kover Izroch Leitzoleya BeMaras HaMachpelah. Yaakov was ashamed and embarrassed that he had violated the Torah by marrying two women. So in this world and at that time, he had a heter to be married to two sisters, to be married, but in perpetuity he wouldn't, and therefore he only buried one Leah there and not Rachel. And not Rachel. Okay. The Radvaz in a Tshuva, Chelik Besim and Tafresh Sadivav writes, Im Yadata Lama Zachza Leia Li Kavir Maras HaMachpelah V'Rachel B'Parshas Drochim Tavin Sod Shtei Achayos. If you knew the truth about why Leah merited to be buried in Maras HaMachpelah and why Rachel was buried on the side of the road, you would know the secret of these two sisters. And he leaves it very ambiguous, very enigmatic, very mysterious like that. If you knew the answer, then you would know the secret of these two sisters. I don't know the secret of the Radvaz. I'm not a mystic. Although by now I look like I'm old enough to be studying Kabbalah. But I still feel young enough that I can't. But perhaps what he means is the following. And I've shared this with you before. It's a very, very powerful image and a very powerful idea. When Rachel is buried on the side of the road, what's the significance? What do we know from Chazal? What do we know from the Navi? And what do we sing, one of the most beautiful songs? Mama Rachel, cry for me. Cry for us, Mama Rachel. Why? That when Jewish people would go into exile, when the Babylonians would lead us, today Asara B'Teves, when that siege would be successful, when the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim would fall, when we would be exiled, where would we pass? We'd pass Kever Rachel. That would be the route that we would take. Mama Rachel, cry for us. Cry for us. And the Medrash tells us, we read about it on Tisha B'Av, that when all the other great ones of our history appealed and advocated and went to Hashem on our behalf, none of them were successful. It's only the pleas and the cries of Mama Rachel. Rachel Imenu, she suffered so long. All she wanted was to be a mother. Rachel, she was the love of Yaakov, the apple of his eye. She was Yaakov's love. They had a raging, mad love. They were absolutely in love. And that meant the world to Rachel. But still, you know what she wanted? All she wanted was, I just want to be a mother. Leah, she's popping out kids like no tomorrow. She's popping out kids like nobody's business. She says, it's nice that I keep popping out kids. I'm the Fertile Crescent. But all I want is a little of Yaakov's attention. I just want to be Yaakov's wife. He's always running to my sister. He loves my sister. I see the way he looks at my sister. I just want to be Yaakov's wife. And what do each of them get in perpetuity? In this lifetime, Rachel had to wait and be patient and struggle to be a mother. In this lifetime, Leah struggled, feeling she's second fiddle to her sister Rachel as Yaakov's wife. But what do they get forever in perpetuity? Leah is forever buried right next to Yaakov in Maras HaMachpelah, she and she alone. And Rachel forever is known as Mama Rachel. Rachel Imenu. Rachel Imenu. Maybe that's the sod of these two achayos, the secret of these two sisters. That even though in this lifetime, sometimes you don't get what you want, sometimes you have to wait and be patient, sometimes it doesn't seem it will work out, but their legacy, how they are remembered, who they are in perpetuity, Leah is forever Yaakov's wife, the only one buried next to him in Maras HaMachpelah. And Rachel, though she's on the side of the road, is forever, she's Mama Rachel. That's how we think of her, that is her name. Chaim Shmulevitz has another idea. Rashi here on this pasuk, Vani b'fo'i min padan, when I was coming from Padan Alam, Mesa, your mother, she went up and died on me, and I buried her right here. And now Yaakov feels he has to explain to Yosef. Says Rashi, why does Yaakov feel he needs to explain to Yosef? Your mother, I left her right here where she dropped dead, that's where I buried her. Me, I just made you promise me that what? You're going to buy a ticket, you'll probably need business class. You're going to need to go on the airline. Last minute, by the way, if you don't know this, never tell the airline. Everyone mistakenly thinks that airlines have a special bereavement fee. You know what their bereavement fee is? Double the normal fee. Because they know that you really need to go. You don't have a choice of which day to go. I don't mean to rank on all the airlines. Some work better with you than others. But there's no such thing. It's one of the great myths of a bereavement fee. So Yaakov says, I know what you're thinking, Yosef. Me, I just made you promise. You're going to bury me in Israel no matter what it's going to cost. While your mother, exactly where she dropped dead, I took a shovel, I dug a hole, I put her right there. So you're probably wondering, how can I mistreat your mother and demand such honor from you? So let me tell you how. It's not what I did to your mother. She died right there. Don't think it was raining and I was lazy. I'd get all wet. I'd get covered in mud. I just didn't want to because it was bad weather. Don't think that's the reason, because it was the dry season. That's not the reason. You know why I buried her right there? Dalacha shalpi adibur kvarti Hashem. No, it's because a basko went out and Hashem said, bury her there. So Chaim Shmulevitz wonders, the great Sichos Musar, Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Shashiva of the Mir. He says, Yaakov Avinu is explaining to Yosef, on the shalpi adibur, I couldn't, I wanted to, I couldn't. He said, I can't. I would have given anything. I would have done anything to take her to Eretz Yisrael, to put her in Maras HaMachpelah next to me. But I'm on a sapi adibur. Hashem said, no, this is the place right here. So why do you have to offer the rest of the explanations? I know you think maybe it's raining. No, it was dry. You think it was a long shlet. No, I could have gotten it there. I know you think all these other reasons. Why is Yaakov giving the rest of the explanations? Why is he even aware? Why did he even think about the rest of them? And Rechai Shmulevitz says an unbelievable principle here. He says, you know why? It's because when Yaakov first heard the Bas Kol say, bury her right here, he said to himself, is that really Hashem's will? Or do I want it to be Hashem's will because it's the easy way out? Because it'd be so much more convenient. Because taka, it would be a schlep. And I have a big entourage. And it would be hard. And she's still hemorrhaging and bleeding. I have a million and one reasons why it's easier to do it here. So am I doing it here because that's what he wants? Or am I doing it here because that's what's more convenient and easier for me? Says Rechai Shmulevitz, this Rashi, Yaakov Avinu, is teaching us a rule that even when we have a way out, we have a legitimate reason we couldn't daven with a minyan that day. Shacharis. You had to do carpool. Somebody needed a favor, you were osig b'mitzvah, you couldn't make it to shacharis. You had a sniffle, a cold, everybody's been shrying, don't come to shul if you even think you don't feel well. You look like somebody who doesn't feel well, don't come to shul. You have a legitimate reason not to come, but you should stop yourself and say, am I not coming because I have the legitimate reason? Or did I rush to conclude I have a legitimate reason because it's so much more convenient to not come? Says Rechai Shmulevitz, Yaakov was double-checking that anas al pi adibur, it was dafka al pi adibur. That it was really the will of Hashem and not only his own will that was getting him. Vayvarach es Yosef, now we turn to these brachas. Perek mem ches pasuk tezvav. We're going to try to squeeze in a lot in the last 10 minutes. Vayvarach es Yosef vayomar. Yaakov gives these brachas. Yosef's children, all the shvatim, are they really brachas? Some of them seem like a very harsh rebuke. Such brachas, who needs? But we'll see in a moment. So the pasuk tells us, "Vayivarach es Yosef." Wonders of Sternbach, Tuvtam Vidas. Listen to this, Rav Sternbach. If you came for nothing else today, this Rav Sternbach, uwah, what a Rav Sternbach, geschmack. Listen to Rav Sternbach. Tamua, hari lo matzina b'mikra baracha shebirach es Yosef. The Sforno makes a comment about this. Look at the Torah. Torah records, Torah testifies, and now Yaakov blessed Yosef. And then it goes on, and he blesses Ephraim and Menashe. He never comes back to giving a bracha to Yosef. What happened? How could you say, Vayivarach es Yosef vayomar? He blessed Yosef and he said, where's the bracha to Yosef? Venira levayer, says Rav Sternbach Shlita, listen to this. She'ikor habracha la'adam, lizkos liros banav holchim bedarko. Demisha banav holchim bedarach Hashem, eino meis la'olam. Torah says, Vayivarach es Yosef. Yaakov gave Yosef a bracha. And what was the bracha? Yosef, Yaakov then gives the bracha to Menashe and Ephraim. The greatest bracha for a parent is to have children and grandchildren on the derech. To have children and grandchildren who are living rich, passionate, proud, practicing Jewish lives. That's the biggest bracha for a parent. Because the tachrin don't have pockets. Because you can't attach a U-Haul to a hearse. So what are you going to take with you? All the things you accumulated and amassed? Your big portfolio? Your real estate holdings? Your stocks? What are you going to take with you? All your silver? All your diamonds? You can't take any of that with you. You know what you can take with you? The merit of being a link in a chain and leaving children and grandchildren who will continue a life of Torah and mitzvot. What a bracha. Is there a bigger bracha in the world? Many people don't appreciate what a bracha that is. You know when you know it's a bracha? When you can feel the klala of being concerned about children or a child or grandchildren who are struggling to find their way. We spoke on Shabbos, Al Tirgazu Badarach, there are many legitimate paths. There's not one way. Yaakov had 12 children. One was Ashkenazi, one was Sephardi, one was Litvish, one was Hasidish, one was Viznich, Baba, Bells. They were all kinds. They were on different drachim. One wore kippah surga, one wore a shtrema, one wore a black hat, one wore... And Yaakov Avinu said, I love them all. I got a lot of minyanim to cover on a Shabbos morning, but I love them all. We're one family. But then there's also the, not on any of those drachim, trying to find their derech. That's very painful. So what's the biggest bracha? Rav Sternbach referencing the Sforno here. Vayivarach es Yosef. What do you mean to give a bracha to Yosef? Where's the bracha to Yosef? Find it in the text. It's not there. It is there. The bracha to Yosef's children, that's the biggest bracha to Yosef. V'chei matzasim mefurish b'zohar kadosh. Says Rav Sternbach, I found this explicit in the Zohar. B'hai kra'is l'stak l'bei Vayvarches Yosef del Eshkachan hacha bracha de barach Yosef el Lebanoi ilav noy vayvarchem miboylei ma vayvarich v'lo Eshkachan des barach Yosef am Rabbi Yosef as daika dechsev as Yosef berchasa de banoi hava v'kad is barchan banoi iu mizbarich de berchasa de banoi dvarnash berchasa ihi shadorish miriboy shal Yosef shenis barach b'mashabanov kiblu bracha ein lecha bracha k'mazu sheyizke lebanom v'yizbarchu. The biggest bracha you can have is to have children, and to have children who stay on the path. That is the bracha. Vayivarach is Yosef. The bracha to Yosef was the brachas to Menashe and Ephraim. Never take it for granted. It's the biggest bracha that we could have. Okay, what should we do? Bechar bia bekashter. Perek memches pasul chav beis. Now, Yaakov gives these brachos. We don't have time to get into it, but all of the mafarshim point out, these brachos are incredibly harsh rebuke. Shimon and Levi, you're impetuous. You're given to your impulse. You almost got us all killed when you took on Shechem. Yeah, I'm waiting for the bracha, Dad. Where's the bracha? For Gezunt and Parnasa, I should marry off my children. No, I'm telling you that you're impulsive and you're impetuous and you almost got us all killed. And they all point out, you know what the biggest bracha you could give your children? This parsha is a huge lesson in parenting. Don't be a helicopter parent. Don't be a bulldozer parent. They used to be helicopter parents. Rabbi Kamenetsky spoke last Shabbos. Helicopter parents would come in and rescue their children. No child should ever have to rescue themselves. No child should ever have to have a skim knee. No child should ever have a bad grade. No child should ever get eliminated from the playoffs of their flag football. Parents come in helicopter. But now, there's not helicopter parents. They have what they call snowblower, bulldozer. Up north they call them snowblower parents. Well, we don't know what that means. We call them bulldozer parents. You know what the bulldozer parents do? They bulldoze all the obstacles from in front of the child. Chalila, they should never have to face an obstacle. They took away the SATs. You know why they took away the SATs? It's mean. You could only get into college. You could better if you took good at... That's mean. What about someone who won't do well? That's so mean. So we bulldoze. We eliminate all the obstacles. No one can ever tell you anything you have to do. Yaakov Avinu says, I want to give my children brachas. You know what the biggest bracha I can give is? By pointing out what you need to work on. Not by giving a participation trophy to all my children. Not by telling every child, you're the greatest, you're the best, you're the most amazing. I have big inner debates. I know why we do it. We have to do it. We do it because it's what this generation needs. But every bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah today, we talk about this child like they're the greatest gift to the world, like no one's ever been better, no one's ever done more, they've got the greatest potential. I'm guilty of it. That's what I do for a living on Shabbos mornings. I understand it. This child's now a franchise. They have a logo. They're a franchise. They're the greatest. We talk about all their virtues, all their everything. I understand. They're all true. Everything we say about the children is true. We're not making it up. It's beautiful. And this is what children today need. We get further by emphasizing their positives and pushing them, and it's wonderful. I'm not saying we should stop. It's what's necessary today. Yoridas Adoros. But, I'm not saying the rabbi or the parent or the Zayda at the speech, at the Suda, has to get up and talk about all the things, you know, to follow Yaakov Avinu and say, you're great in this way, this way, and this way, but I'd like to just mention, you could try a little harder in Gemara Shir. I just want to mention that your room is a pretty big, messy pigsty. You could do a little, I'm not saying you have to do it publicly, but Yaakov Avinu teaches us that the biggest bracha is not telling someone how perfect, how great, how amazing, how... The biggest bracha is to say, here's where we need to work on. I've worked on. Here's what I needed to work on in my life. Here's what you need to work on. Here's how you grow from working on it. So what does he tell Levi and Shimon? You're impetuous, you're impulsive, you almost got us all killed. What saved us? What saved us? My sword and my bow. Becharbi uvekashti. That's what saved us. That's what saved us. Did Yaakov take up arms? Says Rav Soloveitchik. Becharbi uvekashti, my sword and my bow. The Targum translates these two words as tulushon uvaushon. Tulushon uvaushon, we say in Baruch Shemeh, we say in Kaddish, the Skabel. What do those two words mean? Tulushon uvaushon, tefillah, prayer. My sword and my bow are two types of prayer. Since there's no record of Yaakov having done battle with the Amorites, the distinction between the sword and the bow is that the sword is used for close combat, while the bow and arrow is used by the archer at a distance. Correspondingly, tzlo'oson are prayers for our immediate personal needs, wisdom, health, and sustenance. Bo'oson are prayers that relate to Jewish destiny and ultimate redemption. There are prayers that reflect our immediate need, And then there are other more global Jewish prayers. And that's what's reflected, says the Rav, in Becharbi Ubekashti, the two types of prayers. But Eish Tamid, maybe we'll end with this, throwback to Rav Druk, Becharbi Ubekashti B'tzlosi V'osi, Sibash L'Pirshakaz B'Kshuto. So why didn't the Torah tell us that? If what Yaakov was saying was, I saved you through my tefillah, what do you mean, not my sword and my arrow, that's not who we were saved from the Emori with. So the reason is, Sharilom avur shaisa macham in Shechem, har nemar, vayichitas alokim hakol ha'arim asher sivoseim, v'lo radfu achar b'nei Yaakov, v'kimash lo'aisa macham ha'mau acher v'akesha. There was no war with Shechem. Levi and Shimon successfully wiped them out under the ruse of, you need a bris if you're going to marry our sister. Everyone needs to get a bris. And then they wiped them out. There was no war. V'avshi Shimon ha'levi hargu b'cher b'mes ko Shechem, madu amar Yaakov charbi and kashti. True, Levi and Shimon used the sword to go eliminate all the people of Shechem. However, why does it say my sword and my bow? So it must be Yaakov was not talking about actual war, and he was not referring to actual weapons. What was he talking about? Tefillah, prayer. So what do you see as the most successful component or element of war? Of course it's the army. In Israel, we have awe. We should daven every day for our soldiers, our courageous, heroic soldiers who are protecting not only our brothers and sisters in Israel, but Jews around the world. Of course it's our army. And of course it's the military. Of course it's the weapons. But what is the real success of war? It's tefillah, it's davening. Tefillah so she'yakov ha'isa acher v'akesha sa'amite she'harga zan she'ishchem. Yes, it was Levi and Shimon's acumen, physical prowess, military superiority. But says Yaakov, make no mistakes. You know why we were successful? Becharbi uvekashti, because of my sword and my shield and my bow. Bear with me one more minute. You save time on breakfast and lunch today, so we have two more minutes. Hine bebir akfela tzlosi vos siperish ha-meshech chachma. He quotes the Meshech Chachma, who explains here the following. Tzlosi who say that tefila kavua, uba'usi hu bakasha. Tzlosi means my regular tefilos, shachras min chamarav, my regular ordinary, my tefila kavua. Bu'usi means bakasha, special what I inserted, my special request, special needs. Asha amru imratza adam l'chadesh b'tfilaso. Kol bracha shol adam tzracha. We have the template of our amida. We have what we say as part of the script. And then we have what we insert into each bracha. Refa'enu, the people I'm davening so hard, they should have a refuah shleima. Baruch aleinu, we should have a parnasa. Slach lanu, Hashem, forgive me, I've made mistakes. V'lu yushalayim, on this day of asar b'teves. We want redemption. So that which we say is part of the template, the script, even if I'm not paying attention, it works. But what I introduce, what's new, what I author, it has to be authentic. I have to be paying attention. You know, a sword on its own, you don't have to be paying attention. The sharp sword, it pierces on its own. Shabarzal, sheishlo chidud meimis b'chol shehu, a sharp sword, metal that has a point, it pierces, it can kill. But a bow, what do you have to do with the bow? You have to draw it back. If you don't pull the bow back, it's not going anywhere. The bow, you have to pay attention, you have to be mindful, you have to be, so that's what the Meshech Chochma says. Becharbi uvekashti, tzlusi uveusi. Becharbi with the sword, that's like the ordinary script, the template of tefillah. You just have to say it and it works. But kashti, the part of tefillah which is like a bow, you have to be mindful, conscious, paying attention, has to be authentic. You have to pull back. And by the way, it's a beautiful kutzker. You know what else about the bow? The closer you pull it back to you, the more you put on it, the further it goes. With tefillah too. The closer you pull it towards you, the more it represents you, authentic you, the further it goes. The Kutzker says, a little bonus, Kutzker says that when it comes to, it says about children, children are described like an arrow in the hands of the archer. Why are children like an arrow in the hands of the archer? So the Kutzker says, because you know, with children, the closer you pull them towards you, when it's time to release them, when they graduate your home and they go out into life, so if you want them to hit the target, if you want them to travel with a straight velocity, not waver, not fall, not be affected by the wind, the closer you pull towards you, the further, the more direct, the faster, the more on target they're going to fly. So that's Becharbi uvekashti, says the Meshech Chochma, tzlusi uveusi. But one more, the Griz, the Brisker Rav. Chilik ben cherev lekeshes. Cherev be'atzmo davar shechotei v'horeg. keshes, but the bow, the arrows are sharp, but they have no koach on their own. So two types of tefillah, on Shekinah Sagadola, the tefillah every one of us, very similar to the Meshech Chachma. Kechitzer b'yayid gibor, okay, we're out of time. Ay. Vayivarech usam, v'yikbaru oso, buried him, you know, drasha, v'yikbaru oso. One more otzer plos haTorah, they're so good. One more? Yeah, you have time, one more otzer plos haTorah. One more. Naphtali. Why Naphtali was able to walk swiftly. There's so many. But the brachas we give on Friday night. When did Yaakov die? We'll end with this. Anyone know the date of Yaakov's Yurtzai? When did Yaakov die? So the Sefer Shara Melech. Shara Melech. And the drosh is Lachsam Sofer. Chelek Aleph. Yaakov Avinu Meis B'Yom Rishon Shel. Chag HaSukkos. The first day of Sukkos is the Yurtzai of Yaakov Avinu. And that's what the Bnei Yisachar says. And the remez, v'Yaakov nasa sukosa. We know that Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos correspond with the three avos. Sukkos corresponds with Yaakov. Pasuk tells us after he reunites with Esav, Yaakov nasa sukosa, he goes to Sukkos. That's the drashas l'chsam sofer. Here we go. Ein rochok shayakvuraso biyom. When was the burial? He died on Sukkos. By the time they got him up to Eretz Yisrael, first day, by the way, they embalmed him, which you have to understand. I thought embalming's usher. How did they embalm him? They kept him in Mitzrayim before they took him up and buried him, maybe even reburied him. What was the date of his internment? When was he buried? Says the Chassam Sofer, Asara B'Teves. Today is the anniversary of the Kvura of Yaakov Avinu. He was died on Sukkos. He was buried on Asara B'Teves. Quotes many, many other sources here. Some say it was Pesach. Some say it was Chanukah. He has many, many sources. A classic Otzer Plos HaTorah here about all the different times. What is the real Yurtzeit? What is the real anniversary of the day of death and burial? Have a meaningful and an easy rest of the fast. And Amir Tzashem. See you tomorrow morning for 10 minutes Mesilas Hasharim. Living with Amuna. And tomorrow night we're going behind the Bima with Veronica Bocelli, the wife of Andrea Bocelli, who loves the Jewish people and stands up on our behalf.